Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. Here we are this Wednesday evening, March the 25th, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, because one of my guests is not on the East Coast. We'll talk about that in a little while. And I'd like to welcome you all to this evening's program. It's going to be a little different because we are going to, since we are artists, talk about what has been happening here currently. We are always in the moment. But even before we do that, let me do a bit of the housekeeping so people will know exactly where they are and what they are listening to. You are listening to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser on blogtalkradio.com/S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. If you go to blogtalkradio/all of that, you will then see the archives of about 70 episodes that I've been doing for the last year. And this episode will be archived there also. If you are dialing in, it's 516-453-6063. And if you want to ask a question or just to say hello, then you press the number 1. And we'd love to hear from you this evening. This has been a program that for over a year I've talked about how the arts has influenced the lives of so many different kinds of people. Tonight we have two brilliant artists. Sometimes we have executives, we have teachers, we have engineers, because the arts has touched all of our lives so much. Some of us make a living at it, and some of us start as concert pianists and then realize that that's not the vocation that we want to pursue, and then go off and become presidents of Cotton Incorporated almost, those kinds of things. So, but in that evolution of life, we find that the arts have been very, very important and influential in developing the discipline and the love of the arts and making people patrons. So I thank you all for being patrons of the arts and sustaining the arts and giving us a wonderful life, those of us who make our lifestyle in the arts. And now to the current events of this week and a couple of weeks. We have been experiencing such extreme loss of life, and we really want to take a moment to acknowledge the beautiful young children yesterday who are no longer with us because of some of the madness that we have to deal with and cope with in the society that we have now. We also want to bless the souls of the teachers that passed away with them, those wonderful souls. We hope that they are going to be our angels and look down upon us and their families. And we pray that somehow in this society we find a solution or some resolution or some compromise in which we can start to abbreviate all of these almost weekly occurrences of things that are breaking our hearts every time you think about a child who has not even started to live again. So we ask you, when you go to bed tonight, to just, if you could, say a little prayer for them. We are not going to say have a minute of silence because we've had enough of those. But if individually, maybe all of us said a little prayer, somebody will hear us and give us some solution. And with that, we're on to Lenny Godfrey's Straight No Chaser. Now, Let me tell you about these two divas and divo that I have here this evening. They are my Nelson Eddy and Jeanette McDonald for me. They are far more than that. I had the opportunity to work with them several times on several shows, and they were always the person in the show that you could just stand backstage and watch individually or when they sang together. And they're now both not in the same place anymore, and they have a reunion every once in a while, but for the most part, they don't come together and sing in shows all the time the way they used to. So I'm going to be introducing them separately. And I think the first one I'm going to introduce is, I'm going to go out of order because usually you introduce the lady, but I'm going to introduce the gentleman for a minute. I want you to hear something about him. Now, I don't have anything for the lady, but she's going to talk enough by herself. You don't need not to hear nothing. You'll get it. But this is the gentleman. Just listen for a little bit. Now, that's enough, because then you need to find his work and maybe encourage him to make more CDs, as both of them should. And I will now start to introduce you to my friend Gary Aldrich. Gary and I met back in the 1980s. For an organization called ESIPA, Empire State for Institute for the Performing Arts, and we had an opportunity to work on several shows. But Gary also is what we call a bass baritone. He's not only a performer; he's a vocal instructor. He has crossed over from all of that to musical theater. He has performed at Lincoln Center, Kennedy Center, Moscow Musical Theater. He's performed in London, in Paris. He teaches voice at the University of Nevada from 2000 to 2014. So he made a transition from the East Coast to the West Coast with his wonderful partner of nearly 20 years, Mr. Ron Miller, which I'll get into later on. And he is founder and general director of the Sierra Lyric Opera Studio and the Gary Aldrich Vocal Arts Studio. So with that, I am going to ask Gary to say hello to us right now. Hello, Gary.
Hello. Hello to us right now. Lenny, it's such a joy to be here. Thank you so much for having me. Wow.
You're welcome. Now you have to, now that you've said hello, I've got to go over to the diva. Oh, my.
Okay.
Oh, my. Now I'm going to introduce you to, are you a coloratura, Miss Riley, or not?
I'm a dramatic and coloratura. I have both ranges.
See what I'm saying? You see what I'm saying, audience? okay. Let me explain to you how I met Ms. Riley. We were, again, working on a show, and I remember we were in rehearsal, and it was time for the people to start doing the selections that they had. And this woman came up, beautiful woman, large, beautiful eyes, and she opened up her mouth, and a sound came out that I had not heard in a very, very long time. It's a really beautiful lyrical sound. She's absolutely wonderful. She is not only like Gary, she is a teacher of performing arts in the Performing Arts Studio. She has performed everywhere, all over the world. Education is another one of the things that she has been majoring in her career, as well as directing and being a musical director of so many beautiful productions. In 2018, she did a one-woman cabaret up there, and they talked about how wonderful she was in that, as well as, you know, roles like, I believe she did roles like in Kiss Me, Kate, but she directed so many other things that I cannot say anything else. She's directed things like I've got my pages here where I've got to tell you. She's directed in the NISTE in Troy. She's also worked as an assistant to the chief cultural officer upstate in New York. She's been a vocal coach, a teacher, an actor. I think I'm out of my breath. I would like to introduce you now to Miss Betsy Riley. Hello, Miss Betsy Riley.
Hello, Miss Lenny. Actually, I have to change one thing you said. The work that I did in political areas was in Philadelphia.
But
that's
okay. Yes, when you were at the theater, you were at Prince Music Theater in Philadelphia.
Right, after that I went to work for the mayor.
Okay, all right. But this, along with the musical career that you had. So now, Gary, both of you.
Yes, my dear.
Okay. All right. First, I need to ask you all separately, because this, even though I worked with you several times, as we talked about on off air, you work with someone, but you really don't get a chance to know about them. Can you, starting with you, Betsy, tell me, where were you originally from, and when did the music start coming into your life?
Well, I was born in Glens Falls, New York, believe it or not, but then we moved to Albany, and I lived in Albany until I moved to Philadelphia. So most of my life was up here, and then 20 years ago, I went down to Philly. And then what was the extra – there was another question. What was the other question? The first time I knew that I wanted to do music, I was at the house of my best friend in, I think it was fourth grade, and her mother played the piano, and she said, "Do you sing?" And I said, "Yes," and I sang a song, and she said, "Oh, you should be doing something." And that was the beginning.
Before that, had you taken any lessons at all?
Oh, good Lord, no.
I didn't take lessons
until I was in college.
Okay. Mm. And then how did that develop you? How did that mold you? You know, because at that point in time, the voice changes, you know, over time. With all of us, especially those of us who study classically. So how did that then pinpoint you as to what you wanted to do?
Well, when I was working, studying in college, I was doing a lot of classical stuff, which was fine, and I loved it. And then when I left college, I was down in New York studying with Alexander Kipnis, and I was also doing classical stuff with him. Mm-hmm. And what I really wanted to do was musical theater. And mm-hmm. at one point during our lessons, we sat down and he said, "You don't want to sing this, do you?" I said, "Well, isn't that? No, of course not." And he said, "No, I think you should go home and you should sing the kind of things you want to sing." And so I did.
Mm-hmm. Well, what mm-hmm. about you, Gary? Where did it start for you? Where are you originally from?
Whoa, okay. That's thinking back a lot of years. let's see if I can remember. I was I'm originally from a small town in the Adirondacks in New York called Gloversville. When I graduated from high school, I moved to Albany. From there, I moved to New York City. Then I moved back to Albany. I stayed there until 2000. I got married in 1999. We moved to Reno, Nevada in 2000, and we've been here now for, well, what is it now? 22 years.
22 years.
So I've been around. But you know, one of the things, I'm sure Betsy can back this up, where we live and where we work, especially in our business, are not necessarily the same thing. And I know I was singing in New York a great deal more when I wasn't living there.
That usually happens. But now, but when did music first come into your life? Now,
well, mine came a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mine came a little bit differently than Betsy's. I started out trying to fulfill my mother's dream of being a concert pianist. So I started, believe it or not, taking piano lessons when I was four. And I studied until I was 15. Now, if you know anything, you know, about biology, that's what happened about around 15, 13, 14 is when a boy's voice starts changing. And
uh-huh.
When I was a younger child, I just always thought, okay, I'm going to be a concert pianist. I hated it, but I was going to be a concert pianist. And then when I was in 11th grade, I tried out for, and that's a whole story in itself. We could do a program on nerves and things like that. But I did try out for a show called Oklahoma by Rodgers and Hammerstein. And nobody knew who I was. I didn't know I was in a fairly large school. Well, I finished my audition. They did. They knew who I was. And I sang What a Beautiful Morning, I think it was. And I went from being literally invisible to getting the lead in that show. And that changed my life. So, talk about the arts. And I decided this was something I really, really wanted to do. And I did musical theater. I studied in college, mostly classical. And I did like it. I liked things like oratorio, symphonic work, that kind of thing. And so, you know, I did that for, that was always a sideline. It was something I always enjoyed doing. And until about the mid-80s, Betsy and I, this is another part of the program, had started working together in the 60s. By the 80s, it became really clear that I wanted to move out of musical theater, and I moved into opera and was very lucky. An agent heard me and said, "You know, you should be doing something with this." Funny, the quote that Betsy said was about to say, "You should be doing something with this." within 7 weeks, I was in Atlanta singing an opera that I had never heard before in my life. I knew of La Boheme, and so I got the job. They heard me and said, "Come to Atlanta." So I did. And from the mid-80s until, I think, really the start of the pandemic, I pretty much stayed in that area. I think for me, singing at the Met was a great thrill. And of course, I have to say, like most people, really, I think the high point for me was singing the title role in Deflator Mouse at Carnegie Hall. And Bethy, I think you were there.
And I was there. I went all the way down to hear him. Yes, I did.
Yes, at Carnegie Hall. And I have to say that was probably the high point of my career. And that was something around 2005. But, you know, it never, I didn't try to go any further than that. It's in my own little mind. I said, that's enough. You know, I don't need to keep doing this. So,
well, let me,
you know,
let me,
from then on,
go ahead.
I did some concert work, quite a bit of it, at Lincoln Center, especially Avery Fisher Hall, for another 10 years. And I finally then decided to semi-retire. It was just a lot of traveling. My friend Kim Josephson just did a documentary on that part of getting older and singing. And, you know, your life changes. You know, your priorities change. And when you get to a certain age, some changes have to be made. So I decided to stop traveling, and I don't miss it. I don't miss it. I was very, very fortunate. And that's the short version.
You know, both of you, first of all, I want to ask about the support that you had at home. Betsy, I before I forget, I also want, there's another question that I have for both of you there about what you want to be asked. But what kind of support did you have at home when, Betsy, when you discovered that you could sing and you were a young child, what then happened? What happened?
Well, I had a mother who actually could sing but didn't think she was any good. And she thought, once she heard me really actually start to sing, she thought, okay, this is something we have to do. And so I was going to a little, you know, regular parochial school, and she said, no, you're going to go to the Academy of the Holy Names because they take care of music. And I said, okay, so I went. And then I started singing, you know, a lot of solo work there. And then I went into college, and I majored in voice and education. And so I continued there, and I've done a lot. Well, you know, Gary and I have done a lot of work together, but also I've done a lot of you know, stuff on my own. I have a little show that I do, which I was doing and very happily until the problem hit with all this sickness here. But I mean, you know, I'm and all the way through, one of the things that I loved doing along with this was teaching, and so I did a lot of teaching. I taught high school. I started out teaching kindergarten through 12th grade in one school, nearly lost my mind. And then I went into, you know, teaching at the Doan Stewart and Holy Names. And I also, while I was at Doan Stewart, I also taught in the convent, which was, because the nuns were all about 80. It was absolutely wonderful. And then after that, I, you know, continued doing some, you know, performing and directing. And then when I went to Philadelphia, and I'd been at the Princess Theater for a while, well, for 3 years, actually, and I taught the kids. I had the young group of the Rainbow Company, they called them, and I taught them. And then when I left there, I went to work for the mayor of Philadelphia, and I worked for him during his entire stage, which was 8 years. And I loved that. And that was all, again, I was – the executive assistant to the arts, culture, and the creative economy. So I was still in the same business.
Yeah, but you're an example of a person who I believe it not only was a performer, but you function in the business world. Now, Gary, your career was basically in performance, correct?
Largely.
Yes. And once you retired, both of you now are teaching and have studios. What is it about the teaching that does it for you? What, Gary?
Okay.
Let me just say the reason why I asked that is because I read a lot of, you know, your comments to the students, the advice of their dedication, what it does mean to start to study voice and all of those things. And I wonder from both of you, and as I do with my master classes, do you find the dedication in your students the way that you had it when you were a student? But I go back, before I ask you that question, let me go back so what does the teaching do for you? Let me go reiterate that.
Well, oh my Lord, there are so many things. First of all, I enjoy it tremendously. I think I'm good at what I do. I've been very fortunate to turn out or to help, that's not the right word, to help guide whatever a number of very fine singers who are in the business as well. I really do enjoy that, and it also keeps me on my toes, to be honest with you. For many years, my studios, both back in New York and out here, do some pretty major concerts. I expect quite a lot of my singers, and I didn't teach in academia, I don't think as much as Betsy has, although when I moved out here, I did teach for 14 years at the university. Mm-hmm. And to be really honest with you, the spirit, the desire, all of that in at least the university I was in was probably at its lowest, frankly. People who are actually paying privately for it, they generally put a lot more into it. And it's not the same. I hate to say it, but at least for me, it is not the same as it was when I was a kid. It's so easy to become, quote, a star, and that's what they all think it's about. Just all you have to do is watch TV, American Idol, and I've Got a Song, and all of these things. And, you know, somebody will walk into an audition, if you've ever seen them on YouTube, and I'm sure you have, you know, these kids come in and sing something a cappella because a couple of people have told them, oh, you're really good. And it's not the same. You know, when I actually hate to use this phrase, but when we were younger, you really had to be able to sing to get work. And now it's just all about being famous. It's not about the work. It's about being famous and being seen. And for me, at least, it was always about the work. And where the work took me. And the work took me to a lot of places. It took both of us to a lot of places probably we never expected to go, you know? But Lenny, I think it's different. I don't think it's necessarily worse, but I think the values are different than they were.
They are. I'm going to let Betsy comment, and then I'm going to say a couple of things about what you said. Yes.
With mine, it's very different than with Gary's, because although I continued to sing and to perform, the work that I did was in performing arts. When I taught at a small school, Don Stewart, I had a choir of kids that, you know, could they sing well? Sort of, you know, but they sang well because they thought they could do it. And I actually had some 80-year-old nuns singing with them at some points, which was hysterical, but nevertheless worked. And all the way down, the things I've done, when I was in the Prince Theater, I had what they called the Rainbow Connection, and that was a whole bunch of kids from Philadelphia, from all over the city. And most of them had, you know, no training, no anything, and I didn't care because that was not what I was not looking for. What I was looking for was them feeling good about what they were doing, and that's what I've been doing all the way through in all of the teaching that I've done is, you know, I had a chorus at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, of all places, and I had nothing but engineers. And I had a bunch of engineers, and they keep telling me what their engineering was, and I didn't understand any of it. But I had them, and I had faculty members, and I had, you know, undergraduate and graduate students, and we did a lot of singing together. I did a lot of, you know, concert work with them, and they loved it. And it had nothing to do with anything they were doing with their life except for the fact that it gave them a place that was much more, what am I trying to say, emotional than the stuff they were doing in labs, you know. And yeah. And all the way through, everything I've done has been with people who were not necessarily going to do this their whole life, but learned a lot about themselves as they were doing, you know, music and singing and things like that with me. So,
well,
I guess
that's that because this is what I'm hearing, and I totally agree. It's mm-hmm. It was just about instilling confidence in,
yes.
in so many people.
Yep.
The
mm-hmm.
self-confidence,
yep.
and it's amazing, even if they didn't go out to sing, they had confidence that they never had before. It was an amazing thing to
yep.
experience.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think anything but the arts can do that. I think the arts is one of the most important things that can really
exactly.
instill confidence
yes.
with you.
And I think that, you know, even though they weren't, you know, going out to do that professionally or anything like that, they enjoyed music more, all different kinds of music, and they did things that, you know, they would never even have looked at before. They went to concerts they would never have gone to before, and it was great for them.
Yeah, I think that's what we're talking about when we talk about on this program, the sustaining of the arts, because basically everyone's not going to be a performer. I will share with
sure.
you this, probably, and people are going to be outraged maybe. I've never really sat through any of the talent programs that appear on television, only
mm-mm.
because I believe the premise of it is that you can sing, if you sing one kind of way or hold a certain kind of note, that those are the goals and aspirations, and it doesn't support longevity of career. If you look at it, there are only a couple of people who really have careers beyond that, and they would have had it
yep.
anyway, you know. So
yeah.
I think our jobs are, as we pass on the artistry that we experience, is to try to be able to pass on to them the love of the art and the passion of it.
Exactly.
And the enjoyment
yes.
of it. And when you go to the theater, to be able to understand that, you know, you look up at the lights and you look up at the curtain, or you listen to the introductions, and, you know, the excitement of all that then brings people back again and again to the arts,
mm-hmm.
which allows us to do what we do. So now, I have a question. Believe it or not, we only have about 20 minutes left, see, because I told you it goes real fast. Yeah. So if you had your choice about being asked something, what would you like someone to ask you about yourself? What would you like, say, me to know about you that I haven't asked you? So, Gary, you go first.
I can think of one thing. I mean, I've been asked it, and I've been on both sides of it. Can you have a life and a career in this business? Can you actually have a personal life and a career? And my first answer was, when I was younger, was very glib. Oh, of course you can. I mean, and I know some people who have certainly done it. But it's, Lenny, I think you will agree, it's not easy. It's not an easy thing.
It's not. But, you know, it can be done, but it's a lot of work.
It can be done.
It's a lot of work.
But that's the cool thing about it, and it's part of what I was saying before. It's about the work. It's about the work you do both as a performer and as a person, and, you know, establishing what your priorities are. And I'm always fascinated by people who said what I used to say, oh, of course, it's easy. Well, it's not. You know, you have to work to make it work. And I think if one works, the other works more successfully, certainly. Yeah, I mean, if it's the personal and the professional, I think if they're working for you, then it is possible. But
well, I also think, if I can just jump in here, think that's true of any career. I mean, I don't perform all the time. I do perform, but I don't perform that much. But everything I did in the classrooms and everything I did in the nursing homes and all the stuff I did when I was working for the mayor, it's the same thing. You're giving of you and you're getting back, and it may not sound like the same kind of a job you were doing when you were on stage, and it isn't. But nevertheless, it's the same kind of giving of yourself to whatever it is your job is or to whoever it is the people are, you know, that you're dealing with. So it's not performance, but it is performance, actually, in kind of a strange way, because you're still becoming something for them, whether you're a teacher or you're a ministry or you're, you know, an assistant or whatever you are. I think you're still giving of yourself to them, and so it's basically the same kind of thing. Obviously, it's different than you know, singing and performing all the time. But it's still, anything that you do, if it's going to be any good, has got to come from inside you. And when Gary sings, what comes out is Gary and this lovely voice. And what I teach or what I sing or whatever it is I'm doing, you know, it's the same thing. It's just a different sort of thing, I guess. I don't know whether I'm saying anything that makes any sense.
No, it does. But I think what Gary is also saying is that, you know, the work that it takes to work at a relationship and the work that it takes to work on the career are very, very, very passionate, both of those things. And,
have a husband for what it's worth, 20 years.
Yes. I think all of us are in relationships. And it's very important that you recognize the priorities, and they change from time
mm-hmm.
to time.
They do.
The flexibility mm-hmm. of that changing is what gives you the longevity in the business, you know, of knowing when one of those things is the priority and one is the secondary. And then when one has to take, how they switch, that is what works for me and the longevity that I have in the business. But it's also, relationships are not for everyone, and it has nothing to do with show business. Is they're just not for everyone. Period. You know, people get along very. Cohabitation is not for everybody, but they have relationships that are very, very useful and very healthy for themselves when they're in separate entities. So that's, you know, I think that's a very important question. What about you? What questions would you like to be asked? Betsy?
What question would I like to have?
Yes. What question? Now, I've asked you a bunch of questions today. What question over the years would you like somebody to ask you that you have not been asked that you wish you said, well, I wish somebody would just ask how I felt about blah, 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 blah. What?
Oh, dear God. I don't think I've ever even thought about it. I mean, I know people have asked about, there was a whole period in my life when I wasn't doing anything because it was a period of loss and that kind of stuff. But beyond that, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No.
People
have asked me things forever, you know, and I just haven't thought about whether it was important or not. I don't know.
Well, not important. It was just, the thought is, I know I've been asked a lot of different things. And when people know you and you do a certain kind of thing and they know you for it, they have a tendency to always ask in that vein. Is there another part of you that you'd like us to know something about that no one has ever asked you about?
Yes, and that, okay, now it's making more sense to me. People have asked, you know, how do you get up and perform? And isn't that scary? And actually, it really isn't. And I don't know why it isn't. It probably should be. When I'm in front of an audience, I mean, before I go out, you know, I'm a basket case, but once I'm in front of an audience, I'm perfectly content. And once I'm in front of a class, I'm content, or conducting a chorus or whatever. It's the kind of a thing where if I'm doing something that that matters to me, you know, once I'm doing it, I'm very happy with it. When I'm thinking about doing it, sometimes it concerns me a little bit that I'm going to do it right, or I'm not going to do it fast enough or whatever. But I don't know. I guess I'm blessed enough that I've always been doing things in areas that really mattered to me, whether they were performance or not. And so, you know, when I'm doing what I'm doing, I'm perfectly content.
Well,
does that make
now,
any sense?
No, it does. And now I'm going to ask you one of the things that both of you do is both of you have gone from being performers at the very beginning, and then you've both shared the title of musical directors and directors. How does that work for you? How different is that from the performing part for you?
Well, I think that it's all performance of one sort or another. And I think when you go in to direct something, you're still on, you know, and maybe you're on more than you normally would be if you were doing a stage production. Because once you're in front of a class or in front of a symposium or something of that sort, you're always kind of on, even this as informal as it is. You're on. So it's like you really are always in performing in some sense, unless, of course, you're asleep. But, you know,
we've done that.
it's what we are. It's what we've always done.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep performers hours. I stay up late, very late every night. Because my body and my mind are used to that, so I think that's part of it. And there is one elephant in the room that we haven't mentioned. We didn't mention it early on. I just want to take a minute to answer that, and it's really a non sequitur. So if there's more to add to this thought, let's go for it, and I'll bring the elephant in a minute or two, but. I did want to mention it. What do you think, Lenny and Betsy? Should I go ahead with this?
Go elephant for the elephant.
Go for it.
Well, you mentioned it, Lenny, in the start, and you said we'll come back to it. And I do want to mention it because it has played a large part in my life, and nobody really asks, but I know people think about it. In my case, what is it like to be a gay actor in this business? And has it had an effect on how you've been cast or how you've been utilized or any of those things? And, you know, I have to say when I was younger, that was something I was very concerned about, probably more than the people who were working with me were. But it did have an effect. I think if you ask people in our business who there are still a lot of people in the closet who are terrified to come out. I really wasn't. But it didn't really inform my audiences as much as it informed how I approached, say, a role or something of that sort. And because it is who I am and part of what I am, I can't ever say that it didn't really affect me. It did, but not in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
Does that all make sense?
Absolutely. You are definitely preaching to the choir. here.
Well, yeah, and I also think, too, Gary and I worked together forever. I think it's forever,
yeah.
Anyway.
It was in a good way.
And the company that we worked with was a mix.
Yeah.
They were, you know, gay and straight. And I think the best thing about the relationship than Gary and I, well, not the best thing, but one of the best things about the relationship between us is that it's for me, I mean, I was this good little Catholic girl who went to a private school and, you know, the whole thing.
I remember her.
Yeah. And then going into the business would have absolutely destroyed me, except that I came in through the back door, shall we say, I don't know, and found myself completely comfortable and mm-hmm. and not, you know, concerned one way or another whether you were gay or straight or who knows what, you know. I mean, and I think that's one of the reasons I think that Gary and I have done so well together for so long, because we are both satisfied with the other side, so to speak. Does
right.
it make sense, I guess?
Yeah,
I think that makes absolute sense. You know, I think Gary, the big elephant in the room, one of the things that I don't concern myself with, but every once in a while I realize that for some people, I perceive myself as a human being who comes from a unique background that happens to be that of a Black American. But I
mm-hmm.
never think about how that is perceived by other people around me, because I feel like I am limitless in the amount of things that I'm able to do. But is that also agreed upon when it comes time for someone to decide? And I've had to me, as close as I could, that I could do anything that anybody can do. But as I was younger, I thought the opportunities that were given to me when it was non-traditional casting were very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As we would
Absolutely.
Travel, we would do that. We would get reviewed, and there would never be a deal that what I looked like. It was what I was giving the audience. It was never. Oh well, because she is this. The interpretation is that.
Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
true.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I understand exactly what
definitely.
You mean, Gary. You know, and I understand what you mean, Betsy. I think that we all fit in these cubbyholes that people put us in. And we appreciate when people don't keep us there, when they allow us to breathe and become the performers, the best performers that we can become. So
right.
I think that, you know, That
and anybody who didn't allow us, we didn't pay any attention to, quite frankly.
Yeah. No.
Yeah,
there are always going to be narrow-minded people in this world.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
And also there are going to be people who say, as you all talked about, you know, the values of young people. People always look at what we do and they go, I can do that. And they think they can do it because we're good enough to make it look easy. That's why.
That's
mm-hmm.
right.
But it's not
That's
easy.
A different part of my teaching, though. I also let them know it ain't that easy.
No. It's, you know, I was speaking to a young woman today, and I was there was a chorus in the area that with the symphony put together, and they asked me to do a masterclass speaking to them, feeling their confidence, making them feel confident that because a guest artist was coming, and there was a very popular person, and they had to sing behind them. And I said, and all of you all, in 10 years, will be that guest artist because you all have voices that rise to the, you know, the sun. It, you know, it's just about, and what happened was the guest artist was so impressed with their sound that instead of putting them back in the bleachers, they brought them all the way up to the front of the stage so they could be heard. So
that's great.
You know, I mean, it's also instilling that self-confidence that we all are at a certain place. We all begin somewhere. But if you stay steady and develop what it is that God has given you, that,
mm-hmm.
you know, that the work will out. That the work, you know, as Gary said, just doing the work. I always tell my company of actors, I said, just do the work. The work will out. People will see that it may
right.
take a little bit longer. It may take a little longer. But if you, every time they see you, the work is there. They can't deny. about the book. And we're down, we're down to about 8 more minutes. And so I want to be able to say this, ask you this. Both of you are now doing, you know, doing very different things than you did when I met you. What do you think you're going to be doing in the next 2 to 3 years in your life?
What? Well, hopefully being alive.
Being alive is good, yes. This is a good one. And walking and stuff. Well, one of the things that we had talked about, it, we were kind of kidding when we talked on the phone, was that we thought we should do another show together, Gary and I, Winnie, because he's going
to
be in town eventually. And we thought, well, why not? Yeah, we had done one the last time. When was the last time we did one? I don't know how many years ago, but it was a while ago.
It was about
was that
5 years ago.
The reunion? Was it the reunion?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did about five years ago, and we did a complete show. And I think maybe it's time, you know. I mean, we can sit through the whole thing if we can't stand, but nevertheless, we can do it, and it would be terrific.
It should be 2 very comfortable chairs.
There we are. There you go.
You know what? Don't listen to them. They are not at that point in time in their lives that they cannot stand up. They can stand up and be beautiful. But I do think that separately you all have done such wonderful things with your lives to come back together and show separately what you've done and then come back and do some things together. It's wonderful to be able to have that. People don't have that in their careers. They don't
That's true.
You're on equal footing. You do what you do so beautifully together, and then you do it so beautifully apart, you know, to come together and to demonstrate that to an audience that really appreciates it, audience that you have a following with. Betsy can travel out where you are. You can travel back this way. Oh, it could be really a lot of fun.
I definitely think he's coming. You're coming here in a few weeks, aren't you?
End of July.
Yeah. So we'll talk about it in the end of July and see what we want to arrange and how we want to do it and stuff. But I think it'd be a blast.
I think it would too. I think it's time, and I think we'd have a lot of fun. I think we were going to call it "I'm Still Here."
Yes.
Something like that.
I do a show now. Periodically, I haven't been doing it because of the place with everybody being sick, but I do a show, and I love to do it at the nursing homes because it goes from very old songs right to today, and it's called "How Did I Get Here?" Which is a very good question. You know, how did I get here? So the next one we'll do, that would be good. We have a new name for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's probably going to happen.
I think it has to.
You know, the thing that's been always very clear to me, and this is, we're talking, Betsy and I have actually worked together. If you count, you know, the intervening years between, say, my moving away, we're talking close to 50 years, maybe longer. Our first concert together was in 1960, was it 1967, wasn't it?
Yep, when
that's
we did that first concert.
That's the first time you and I ever sang together, and
we've always had a rapport. Do you remember what that concert was?
It was all very classical, and it was probably stuff we were too young to sing, but didn't know it. And so,
Mary Ledgerwood was the teacher, and she was holding a recital, and you and I sang. You sang your thing, and I sang my thing, and then we sang together.
Right.
Didn't know each other at all.
Not at all, no.
And the thing that I remember the most from that is that I think my audience was my mother, probably. I don't think anybody else came. She was a saint. But there was a whole crew, Dick Feldman, Tom Wathews, a whole bunch of people that knew you and had seen you, and that was when they decided that I should come and do Oklahoma with you, and that's how that got started.
That was a fascinating thing, but it was when we realized that both of us realized that what we had was and I do want to say this before it's over. I mean, I suppose I could do it on video too, that what we have, and we both have acknowledged it through our lives, is a tremendous gift. And what we have been soldiered with is to take care of that gift to the best of our ability. And in doing that, we really formed this really incredible bond where even on stage we could practically finish each other's sentences, you know.
Even if it was
something we were improvising, which we did quite a bit of, you know.
Because we couldn't always remember the lyrics.
Well, there is that.
You know, but like I say, having done this, having been doing this for a bit, it is a rare thing that kind of chemistry continues in your life. And it's a wonderful thing to be able, you know, we see it in film sometimes where people couple together and they really did do well for 5, 6, 7 films, 8 films. That's, you know, sure. There's a chemistry there. And then when they would go with someone else and you didn't see the chemistry, you realize how wonderful it was for them to be doing that. So I would say to you as we wind this down, because I'm getting ready to wind this down, talk to the audience about my next week's guest, who are really a visual artist, Kung Fu, and his brilliant wife, Sally, that people should talk about. But I wanted to look for the video that we're going to be doing on the After Show Afterthought, when we will continue the premise of the fact that you two should not only, and I will say this, not only think about doing the concert, but please record the concert so that when I have you back on, I have evidence that I can put on the two of you singing. I would appreciate it.
That would be fun, sure.
All of the years together,
you know, that's something I think it's important, because I think you all make a great contribution to the arts, and that's really, really an important thing. But
well, that'd
now
be fun.
I'm going to say goodbye to the two of you for right now, and I'm going to take these last minute and a half and say goodbye to the audience and to see them next week. But I want to thank the both of you, because you're exactly what I thought, and you did exactly what I thought you were going to do, and you were fabulous, and thank you. You know, I am so, so very, very happy to have both of you in my life. And thank you for consenting to come on Lenny Godfrey Street.
Oh, thank you. This has been a fun.
This has been great fun. Thank you for having us.
Oh, it's just fabulous, and it won't be the last time. It's just that you all have to go and get your show together. And, you know, and then,
alrighty.
Thank you very much. But those of you who
we
are going
do
to
do it, thank you,
Lynn. You're welcome. Those of you who will tune in next week, Hong Fu and Sally Fu will be here, the visual artists. They will talk about a different culture, the Malaysian culture. So we're going to talk about the arts and visual arts and how that really sustains itself in our society. With that all going on, I'm really, really happy to tell you that I've had a fabulous time with my two friends of many, many years, and I get a chance to talk to them and see them in a few minutes in our after show. So I will talk to you later, and I'll see you on the radio, everyone. Lenny Godfrey, Straight No Chaser. Bye-bye now.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever, in the morning, fever all through the night.
listen to me, baby. Hear every word I say. No one can love you the way I do, 'cause they don't know how to love you far away. You give me fever when you